Welcome to Soul Lies, where the spiritual and the soul crosses paths. Stay tuned to learn ways to grow your spiritual understanding in order to reveal lies your soul believes. This podcast will help you learn the truth and propel you towards freedom in Christ Jesus. This is Jenny Fouts, licensed counselor in Louisiana at Christian Center Shreveport. Welcome back, everyone. I'm so glad that you're here and to join us today as we continue with Misty's story. And I'm sure that some of you might know someone who is fighting with an eating disorder, and I encourage you to send this to them so maybe they won't feel so alone, and maybe she can give words to feelings and emotions that they're having. It might help them. But remember, when you're in the throes of addiction, it's really, really hard to think clearly. So now Misty's realizing she's skeleton. She's gonna keep the food down. She's had, you know, all kinds of physical issues due to what she's experienced. Let's talk about Misty. What is the next thing that you decided to do?
I decided I was going to get better by myself, and that lasted for a while. But mind you, I was still drinking and smoking a lot of weed at this point, and that obviously also doesn't help you think clearly. So I did with the eating and thing, I did well for a while. And actually what happened was I had a cat, and my cat died, and it was just, I don't know, I think it was just like a ticking time bomb, some waiting to happen. But it was this whole, like, the cat needed to be put to sleep, and I didn't want to take the cat to be put to sleep. And so basically I just watched this cat die, and then I went to class, and then I came home and, like, sat with this cat while it died. And I'd had that cat forever, and he used to sleep with me, and it was really sad. And it just kind of, I didn't know how to cope. And, you know, when you go try to talk to somebody about a cat dying, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. Especially if they're like, I'm a dog person. It doesn't make any sense. But
it was an emotional trigger for you.
Yeah, it was really all I needed. I think I was just waiting for something to send me over the edge, mm-hmm. honestly, because I was just going through the motions, and it was still very, very much a mental battle, even though on the outside it looked like I was good, mm-hmm. Because I was eating and all this and keeping it down. But I basically, it didn't take long, because we'd been down this road before. It did not take long before I was not doing well again. But at this time, it scared me enough that I was like, you know, if I wouldn't have checked myself out of treatment, maybe this, you know, I would have got a little better handle on this. So I decided myself to go back before it got bad. And so I went back, and I was ready for the abnormal food and things, and it was about the same. They at least said there was nothing wrong with my heart this time, which I thought they were going to say. But I mean, I went and I finished it. You know, it helped me get a baseline, just to get the behaviors under control, I think would be that main thing, because, you know, you're kind of just sequestered away. I think treatment isn't, I mean, there are parts of it that maybe are difficult, but treatment's not really that difficult, in my opinion, because it's easy to, not that it's easy, but it's easier in there because you're in a controlled environment. You have none of your external things, external people, any of that.
You don't have any emotional triggers going off.
No, you don't have life happening. Yes. You're just in a little bubble, basically, that all you have to do is focus on not doing the things that are harming you. And so I did that. There was an outpatient portion of it. And so I basically stayed in a hotel over there and did the outpatient thing. I mean, it was just a formality at that point, because in my brain, I tried to tell him, like, hey, this is enough. I don't, like, I'm at a good weight. And I was at a healthy weight. I'm like, we can back off and let me just get to, like, a maintenance place. And they're like, no, you got to gain more weight. And it was just, I was like, you're not hearing what I'm saying, though. I can understand and hear me, because I was actually at a healthy weight. It wasn't just my eating disorder going, mm-hmm. oh, I'm in, you're at a healthy weight. Like, I really was. I was good, and I was back around my normal weight range. I've always been about the same, and my whole life, you know, that I've been this height or whatever. And so you know, I basically in this outpatient thing, I would go there during the day. By the time I came back, I would throw up whatever I could was left in my stomach and start exercising. So I was already back in behaviors before I left. Mm-hmm. But I stayed just to say I finished. So I finished that. I went home. Again, it did not take long before I intended to do well. But, you know, I kept drinking. I kept smoking weed. I'm still with this one guy. He had bought a ring at this point. I mean, it was like, I'll give it to you when you get all your behaviors under control. It was like, you know, just trying. I think the best I knew how. But I was just not in a – I wasn't in a good place. At this point, I know that what I'm doing is wrong. I know what I'm doing is detrimental. And, I mean – so then there was also in the midst of all this, there was a lawsuit we were having to deal with because I got raped when I was 16 in a hospital facility. Mm-hmm. And it dragged on this long that it's just now going into mediation. So there again, that didn't help I had to cope with some other things because I'm having to depositions and reliving all this stuff and sitting. I was sitting in mediation while I had pneumonia and I needed to be in the hospital, but there was no room basically. And it wasn't that she was like, you know, you can be at home. I'd rather you be in the hospital, but there's no beds. So, I just sat in there and then have all these notes of all these counselors that I've seen since I was like 15 and I'm just sitting there reading them. And finally the paralegal turns around and grabs me. She was the sweetest, you know, God puts people in your path. You can see in hindsight, not necessarily at the time. And she was just like, you need to stop reading these. These are not who you are. This is just people's perceptions. Just stop. Anyways, we go through all this. Maybe that kind of triggers some more stuff. And I mean, I'm back full force in it. And at this point, I mean, every time you enter back into a behavior of addiction, it just gets worse. So at this point, it's not only will I just eat and throw up some. Like, I don't even know how many times I ate and threw up in a day at this point. I mean, I would order all the food I had. I mean, I would go hide. I would go somewhere, just in a random abandoned place to throw up food if I needed to. Like, that sounds terrible, but I mean, that's just at the place we were at, or I was at. And I mean, I would throw up and just ran. And the sad thing is, a lot of this stuff I learned at treatment. All these other girls were talking about all the stuff they did, and I was like, huh, I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of gave me fuel for the fire because I wasn't in a place where I was really ready to deal with it because, you know, the eating disorder was just the manifestation of stuff that I'd been living with and believing with. And it was lies that I believed, trauma that I had not dealt with and didn't want to deal with.
And how did you come to Jesus? How did that happen?
Well, my doctor kept going on about this. So the lawsuit got mediated and I got awarded a substantial for me amount of money. She had been talking to me, my doctor, same doctor, about this place in Arizona. And I mean, I think it was like $250,000 to go there. And I'm thinking, man, I can't afford that. There's no way. Then we go through this mediation and now all of a sudden I can't afford this place. But I'm not ready to do the work I need to do. At this point, I remember I would sit, this is the weirdest thing. I would sit in my closet at night. I would have thrown up everything all day. It drained me. And I'd be sitting there smoking weed and reading a Bible, which is nuts. I mean, come on. But the ashes would fall on the Bible pages. I'd just scroll, get them off real fast. Oh, that's a holy book, you know, and make no sense. But I remember at this point, I didn't care if I died. Like, I really didn't. I didn't see a way out besides dying. My mom and dad had people basically telling them, you know, y'all just needed to plan a funeral. Like, it's not, you've done all you can do. Almost like I was on a hospice, you know? And, you know, my parents were like, no, it's my kid, no. But I didn't want to get better, honestly. I just wanted to die. I was just done. I didn't see what I had to offer. Again, just believing, like, you have nothing to offer. You don't matter. Your very presence on this earth makes everybody around you more miserable. You're a problem, you're a burden, all of this. And so what happened was my doctor kept talking to me about this place, and I'm like, yeah, I'll look into it. Kind of blowing her off. I had no intention of looking into anything. My mom decided she's going to go with me to the doctor one day. Well, I really want to go. I want to hear what she's saying and see if you're telling me the truth or whatever. And I'm like, okay. So the doctor, she starts talking to me about this place in Arizona again and was like, well, will you consider it? And da 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 da. And I'm like, eh, you know, I don't know. I think about it. My mom starts crying and she's like, please, will you go? You're going to die. And I'm like, I don't care. But, you know, it's my mom. And so then I'm feeling bad. And I'm like, now my mom's in here crying. And I got the doctor looking at me. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll go. And I'm just thinking, I'm going to blow them off. I'm going to just, yeah, I'll go. I'll agree to it. Everybody get off my back. I'm going to go home. The doctor's like, okay, I'm going to go call them. And I'll have you on the phone with them in a minute. And so at this point, you're in or you're not. And so I knew, though. There was something in me that knew, like, I was going to die. And this, like, it's like I said earlier, like, I felt possessed. I mean, I really did. I was just like, I don't think in hindsight I was demon possessed necessarily, but I was doing things that I didn't want to do. And I wanted to stop. Like, my spirit was like yelling, like, please help me. But I didn't know how. I just kept doing the behaviors. Like, I couldn't stop. So anyways, long story short, I get on the phone with admissions. They get all my info. At this point, I'm down to 76. So it's like just worse every time. And they're like, you know, you have to stay inpatient here for 60 days. You know, and you got to do what we say. You can't talk to anybody for 30. And I'm like, yeah, all right. And so we pack, I go. I had, I don't know, like a week or something. It was to the point of not, I wasn't thinking straight though at this point. I don't even barely remember like getting there. My parents flew with me to go there. And my mom even to this day was like, if I wouldn't have went with you, you wouldn't have got there. I didn't know half the time kind of where I was. I really couldn't think straight. My brain had no food at this point. Like, it had nothing there. I fell asleep on the planes, like passed out, like they would have to wake me up. And like, ladies, like the flight's over, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have made it there. I got there. It was a Christian based place. They made us go to chapel and things every day. And I mean, their approach to it was way different. As soon as I got there, the lady's like, I met with a nutritionist and she was basically like, so I need you to have a feeding tube. And I was like, excuse me? No, I'm not doing that. And she was like, yeah, I need you to do this. I need you to do it. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. And I'm like, those other people are bad. Like, I remember the look on her face. She's like, so you don't think that you're as severe as anyone else here? And I'm like, no, I don't look like that. And she's like, yeah, that's not accurate at all. You're one of the smallest people here, and I need you to do this. And I was like, okay, so basically I got a feeding tube. They ran it at night, and I got to just eat normal people meals, and it was a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was normal. It was a place, you know, you got your vegetables, your proteins, everything you needed, but it was a normal people meals, and you had some options. You could pick your menus for the day. They had all these different things. I didn't deal with everything there, but there were a lot of things that I did deal with, and there was some, like, the thing with the...
So you kind of made the decision you're going to let them help you.
Yeah.
At this point.
I had nothing else.
Yeah.
I had nothing else. At this point, me and the guy had broken up. It was right before I graduated college. I managed to graduate college. It took me an extra year because I had to drop out twice because I literally couldn't follow.
You can't think, yeah.
No, I couldn't follow. I tried real hard. I couldn't follow at all. And I mean, I'm a good student, but it was not there. And so I finished that treatment, and I mean, I came home.
Well, and what happens next is very, very important. I hope that you guys stay tuned and listen, because what happens next is the answer to most all of our problems. And you know, we can all deal and understand the hard-headedness that we get into about changing parts of our lives. We can all relate to that. Let's hear what she does with her hard-headedness and how it really does help her.
Yes.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Soul Lies is meant for information only. It is not a substitute for counseling.